Hashmini, which comes in the aftermath of Pesach, is a parsha that can be connected in many different ways to Chag HaPesach. We're going to explore one particular approach. And by way of introduction, we have at the end of Parshas Shmini in Vayikra Yud Aleph, the parsha of Shrotzim, crawling creatures. Now, crawling creatures fit into many different categories. What's common to all of them is that they're forbidden for achila, but as far as tuma is concerned, there are shrotzim tahorim, shrotzim tmeim. The Torah says at the end of Parsha Shmini, al tishaktu es nafshal seichem bechol hasheretz hashoretz v'lo sitamu bahem v'nitamtem bam. Ki Hashem Elokeichem, v'skadashtem v'yisam kedoshim ki kodosh oni v'lo sitamu es nafshoseichem b'chol asheretz haromeis al haaretz. And here, within the context of Tumas Shrotzim, the Torah concludes by saying, Ki ani Hashem amale eschem eretz Mitzrayim lios lachem lelokim v'yisam kedoshim ki kodosh oni. Hashem identifies the kedusha and the antithesis of Tumas Shrotzim by Ani Hashem Hamal Eschem Eretz Mitzrayim. What is the connection here between Eretz Mitzrayim and, of course, the Geula from Eretz Mitzrayim and the parasha of Tumas Shrotzim? What I'd like to study with you today is insights of the Arizal and others who came in the aftermath and the footsteps of the Arizal. As you know, the Arizal lived 5 centuries ago in the city of Tzfat, around the same time as the Maral of Prague, just in different parts of the world. The Arizal gives us insights into that part of the Torah that's concealed, that's below the surface. And I believe in this context, we can piece together a number of different agadotos, because the Arizal was an expert at giving us an insight into the agadic part of Shas. And this will, Emirtz Hashem, if the experiment works and is successful, we'll be able to connect the Yetzias Mitzrayim with the parsha of Shrotzim. Let's open up by mentioning first the agadotin of Mitzias HaMechalef of Days. In the name of Rabbi Yishmael, Yitzias Mitzrayim, the Kosa Rachmona Gabi Shrotzim Lomeli. Why does the Torah connect the Yitzias Mitzrayim with the Parsha of Shrotzim? And the Gemara says, in the name of Rabbi Yishmael, Il Mole Helisi Es Yisrael Vimitzrayim Ela Bishvil Dover Zeh She'ein Mitamim Bishrotzim Die. It would justify redeeming Klal Yisrael, God's intervention to redeem Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim, just for the sake of Shrotzim, of Ein Mitamim B'Shrotzim, to avoid Tumas Shrotzim. That itself would have been enough to justify Yitzias Mitzrayim. And the Pella is, there are 613 mitzvahs, of which 365 are mitzvahs lo taseh, that enjoin us from doing X, Y, Z, 365 of them. Why do we focus? Why does Rabbi Shmuel call our attention to one specific losaseh, and that of Shrotzim? And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to take Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim b'schus dafka, in the merit of this mitzvah, this losaseh, not to defile oneself with Shrotzim. And we're going to leave this question on the side. As I said at the outset, I want to study with you some insights of the Arizal. And we're going to study an essay here of Rav Pinchas Friedman from Belz in the Shvilei Pinchas. And if you have the copy, you can follow along with me. He starts with a Gemara in Erev in Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, the Agadata that tells the story of a Talmid Vasek back in the city of Yavne, an early student, probably a great Talmid Chacham, And the Gemara describes this person, Shayamitayer es Hasheretz b'meyam v'chamishim tamim. He came up with 150 arguments to derive logically the conclusion that a sheretz should be tahar. The Gemara doesn't present 150. That would take us a few mesechtas in Shas. But Ravina is quoted here in the Gemara in Erevin as giving an example, one example of how to be metayer sheretz, how to paradoxically come to the conclusion that a sheretz, which the Torah says explicitly is tameh, is really tar. So Ravina's logic is meant to give us a little bit of a clue, like a small light that comes through on this 150, like a representative. And Ravina uses the logic of a Kal Vachomer. Omar Ravina, ani adon vatarena. I'm going to darshan a Kal Vachomer to be Matiah the Sheretz. Uman nachosh shememis. A serpent with its toxic poison, if it bites a human being, it could kill. It bites an animal, it could kill. Umar betuma b'olam. And as a result, there is a very significant increase of tuma in the world. And in the case of a human victim, as a result of the death that was caused by the nachash, there is the harshest of tuma, the most profound level of tuma. And yet, paradoxically, the nachash itself that generates this harsh tuma is tar. It's amongst the shrotzim that is not metame. Sheretz, she'eno memis umar betuma. Sheretz is limited to a second rate, so to speak, less profound level of tuma than that it generates. It's not capable of being memis, at least you can say that for most shrotzim. Is lo kolshkein, certainly should be a Torah. If the Torah is metayer nachash, which is the source of such a severe tuma, then certainly the Torah would be metayer other shrotzim, which are not capable of generating such a severe, profound level of tuma. The Gemara at the end rejects the Kal Vachomer, because how can we have such a Kal Vachomer when the Torah says explicitly that shrotzim are tameim? Velohi masakotz bialma ka'avid. It's not that the serpent generates tuma, but rather the serpent is like a very sharp stick or a call it a spear that goes into the body of a human being and kills the human being. The human being's death, his corpse, that's what generates the tumah. So it's not the nachash itself that brings the tumah. The nachash is, in the Gemara's language, coats. It's like a thorn, and as a result of penetrating this thorn into the body of a balchai, the balchai is killed, and that's how there's a ribui tumah in the world. But it's not the nachash itself that generates the tumah. It's a two-stage process. The nachash will kill its victim, and then the victim itself, the corpse, the body of the victim itself, is what generates the tumah. And we have a Rabbi Wolf Baskovitz. Now, wait, let's just give a little background. One of the outstanding commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch is the Machtzis HaShekel. His name was Baskovich. His brother was Rabbi Wolf. Rav Wolf was the son of the Machtzis HaShekel. The Machtzis HaShekel was Rabbi Shmuel Baskovich. His son, Rav Wolf, is known not for his interpretation of Halacha, but more of Agadata. And on the Mishnah in Edios, in the third Perek, he tries to answer the following question. Why is it that the Gemara in Erevin that we studied, the Talmud Vosik, is going to be Matayah the Sheretz with 150 different arguments? Why 150? Why not 149? Why not 151? What's the significance here of the number 150? It cannot be coincidental. And in order to answer that question, Rabbi Wolf invokes an Agadita in Masechta Rosh Hashanah on Daf Chaf Aleph Amid Beis. The Gemara tells us that Chamishim Sharei Bino Nivru Ba'olam, meaning on the positive side of the scale in terms of Kedusha, we have God has created 50 different gates of Bina. Bina is a very advanced and profound intellectual understanding of a subject matter. There are 50 different ways that you can understand and analyze a particular subject through the Sharei Bina, the 50 Sharei Bina. The Kulam Nitnu L'Moshe. Moshe was given all of them, Chaser Echad, except for one of those Sha'arim. In other words, Moshe was given 49, but not the 50th. Shenemar, Pasuk in Tehillim, Kapitel Ches, but Chasreyu Ma'at V'Elokim, he's a little bit less than God. So Revolf is bothered by this statement. Does it mean that Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the giver of the Torah, he was excluded from one of the Sha'arim of Bina, the 50th Sha'ar? He didn't achieve any understanding whatsoever. The door was completely shut in his face. That's not a possibility. It cannot be that he had no asoga, no concept at all of this one shar of the Torah. He was the one who gave us the Torah. But the answer is that he wasn't complete. His intellectual understanding of that shar was not perfect. Certainly had a partial understanding of even the 50th Shar, but only a part of it, only a segment. And every Jew who works hard with Yegiyas HaTorah can reach even the 50th Shar. Again, right now, he cannot supersede that of Moshe Rabbeinu, but Liosid Lavo, at the end of days, at the time of the ultimate redemption, will be able to be masig to contemplate and understand, comprehend all the 50 Sha'arim, even Bishlemus, even in perfection. Now, in order to understand the number 50, because the Gemara says explicitly in Rosh Hashanah there are 50 Sha'arei Bina, Rabbi Wolf quotes the Arizal. And here's Chiddush number 1 for today of the Arizal in Shara Gilgulim. There the Arizal discusses individuals who were not able to achieve their goal in this life. They have to come back in a reincarnation. That's called Shara Gilgulim, but that's not the part of our study today. But the Arizal says the following, that amongst all the mitzvahs, we have 613 mitzvahs that we have to be mekayim in this world. The most important of them is Esek HaTorah. So you can take 612 on one side of the scale, and Esek HaTorah, Lasok B'Divrei Torah on the other side. It's Shkula, it weighs as much as all the other mitzvahs. Why? Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. Says the Arizal, because Esek HaTorah will give us the insight into all the other mitzvahs. We'll be able to understand them, comprehend them based on Esek HaTorah. And then the Arizal introduces the concept of Pardes, a very, very famous Chiddush revolution, so to speak, of the Ari that had a tremendous impact on the way we transmit Torah. He says Pardes means Pshat, Remez, Drash, and Sod. There are four levels of understanding Torah. We have to use these different ways of understanding Torah to appreciate the mitzvahs, to contemplate them, to analyze them. We need a Rebbe to teach us Pshat, Remez, Drush, and Sod. And the Arizal goes on to present his thesis that if we're missing one of these four, then our Esek HaTorah is incomplete, and therefore we'll have to come back a second time around. That's Gilgul Neshamas. Says Rabbi Wolf, you know what? There's Pshat on one side, and Remez, Drash, and Sod on the other. With regard to understanding any particular mitzvah through Remez, and the same will be true with regard to Drash and Sod, we have 50 Sharei Bina. There are 50 different ways of understanding a mitzvah, b'derech Remez. There are 50 different ways of analyzing a mitzvah, b'derech Drash. There are 50 different gates to understanding a mitzvah, b'derech Sod. and the sum total is 150, 50 times 3, kuf nun. This pshat, though, on the other hand, pshat allows only one derech, one approach. It tells us about the implementation of a mitzvah. Here's the way you have to implement a mitzvah. And the pasuk about Midbar Tesvav says, Torah achas u'mishpat echad yilachem. As far as the mitzvahs are concerned, in terms of the level of pshat, meaning how to understand the requirements of a mitzvah and how to implement the mitzvah, it's Torah achas. The uncle says, Horeis hachada, it's one. Pshat doesn't lend itself to 50 different interpretations. Those variations are appropriate, the Chamishim Shari Bina, for Remez, for Drush, for Sod, but not for Pshat. And what the Talmud Vosik, back in Masechta Erevin, wanted to darshan L'Tairas Asheretz with 150 Tamim, is because as far as this mitzvah of Tuma Shrotzim is concerned, if you put Pshat on the side, now analyze this parsha of Tumas Shrotzim through Remez, Drush, and Sod, you end up with 150 different ways of analyzing. And you can analyze this category called the Sheretz HaMetame on the 150 ways and arguments that will lead you to the conclusion, paradoxically, that the Sheretz should be Tar. And when the pasuk says here in Parsha Shmini, "Eile atmeim lachem b'chol asheretz kol enogeh mem b'mosom yitmad ha'arev," we should be mekayim this mitzvah with pshat, and then there's only one way of understanding it, and that means that the sheretz and enogeh b'sheretz is tame. And by the way, it's not only enogeh b'sheretz. In the case of a kli cheretz, it would be even the avir akli, but that's not for us now. But now, if let's say you leave out pshat and you want to approach the parsha of Tuma Shrotzim from the perspective of Remez, Drush, and Sod, since you omit pshat, you're in a very dangerous, precarious situation. You may be tempted to use your intellect in such a way, activating the Chamishim Sharei Bina for Remez and the same for Sod and Drush and Sod, you might come to a mistake. And using your analytic skills that God bestowed upon you, your intellectual ability to analyze with the Chamishim Sharei Bina, you may come to the conclusion, paradoxically, that the Sheretz should be Tar. And the reason for this is because the Yetzer HaAdam will approach and tempt a person to deviate from the pshat by using his Sharei Chochma, or shall I say misusing and abusing them, he will come to the conclusion that a Sheretz is Tar. And that's why, says Rav Wolf Baskowitz, we find, for example, in Rabbi Elimelech Milozhinsk, you know, the famous Noam Elimelech, that he writes that a person has to be mekayim the mitzvah Torah with what we call emuna pshuta. That's pshat. You know, there's only one way of doing it. The way the Torah requires you, and as an Eved Hashem, you live up to that commitment to fulfill the mitzvah kipshuta. And Rabbi Elimelech used this principle to shed a light on a very strange Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, very famous Gemara. The Gemara asks, Lama Tokin, why do we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Now that question is a loaded question. You know, you could go into great mystical analysis and depth about what shofar is all about and what it accomplishes on high. But Lama Tokin, the Gemara right away rejects the question. It says, Rachman Amar Tiku, what do you tell me, Lama Tokin, why do you blow? Don't give me philosophical answers to a simple question that needs an answer in pshat. Rachmana Amar Tiku. The Torah commanded us to blow the shofar. Yom Trua Yilachem. So you can add all the kavanos and all the asogas and all the yichudim that you want and give many, many different explanations for the purpose and the achievement of the shofar. What happens as a result of the shofar? But that's not why you blow the shofar. You blow the shofar because of Emuna Pshuta, Rachmana Amar Tiku. And it's amazing that the Baal Shem Tov, who, as you know, is the founder of Hasidus, he had tremendous hasogas in all the mitzvahs, he used to tell his talmidim, and this is recorded in the Yismach Yisrael, that after all my hasogas, in the shrashei ha-mitzvahs, in the roots and the depths of the mitzvahs, after all the oneg and the tainug that I get, the enjoyment I get from these hasogos, I leave them all aside when I want to do the mitzvah, when I approach the mitzvah to implement the mitzvah. It's be'emunah pshuta. It's that number one that comes before the 150 sharei bina that we discussed before. It's be'emunah pshuta. And the Besht is famous for saying, ich bin ein nar, ich gleibt. Just like a nar, a child, has emunah pshuta, he believes in God, he senses God's presence. That's how I approach the mitzvahs. So I can understand the mitzvahs on a great deep level with all sorts of sagas, lamayla lamayla, v'sharshei ha-mitzvahs. But when I come to fulfill the mitzvah, to implement the mitzvah, I put all that on the side, and all I'm interested in is focusing on fulfilling the mitzvah itself, because Hashem commanded me to do so. That's my simple but profound faith. That's emunah pshuta. Leave out drash, remesh, and sod. That's all very good and dandy. But the Yetzer HaTov wants me to dedicate myself to fulfill God's will. And if I get sidetracked with remesh, drush, and sod, then who knows what might happen, and the Yetzer HaRa might get the best of me and fool me to come up with new ideas and new explanations based on my human rational shari bina, and that might derail me from the mitzvah itself. So again, just to summarize what we have here, a gewaltige insight of Rolf Baskovich, the son of the Matzah Shekel, that he says that fundamentally, although there are 150 ways of understanding any particular mitzvah in the Torah based on Chamishim Shari Bina times 3, Drash, Remez, and Sod, but at the end of the day, there's Pshat, which is Echad, Torah Achas, Oraisa Chada, without any complications and any sophistication. We go back to Narus, as the Besht used to say, and we do it, I'll be Pshat. Pshat only allows, only tolerates one thing. The Torah says, Eile Hatmeim Lachem B'chol Sheretz, that's it. And that's how we do the mitzvahs. Why are you going to blow the shofar? Rachman Omer Tikkun. My Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik tells the story from his youth in Chaslavich, where he was raised by his father, Rav. Rav Moshe was the Rav in Chaslavich in White Russia. And in that town of Chaslavich, which was Kulo Chabad, it was all Lubavitcher Hasidim, with the exception of the Rav himself, who was a Litvak, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. And how did that oddity come about? Because way back in the day, when the Balatanya, the first Rebbe of Chabad, was running away at the time of Napoleon, and he looked for asylum, someone who would hide him, and the doors were closed until a Litvish Rav in Chaslavich offered at great risk and sacrifice and danger to his own life to hide the Alter Rebbe. And from then on, the people of Chaslavich took it upon themselves that they would always have a Rebbe from the Litvisher movement, Rav Lapidos, and then Rav Moshe Soloveitchik and others. So Rav Moshe was a Litvisher Rav of a Chassidish Shtot. And I tell you this because of the story of Tkiya Shofar. Now you have to understand, according to the Balatanya, Tkiya Shofar, to Zayif, it achieves amazing things up in the higher worlds. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Rosh Hashanah is sitting on the Kisei Adin, but there's something called the Kol Pashut, which is the sound and the noise of the shofar that penetrates through all the worlds up above, all the different blockades, and reaches the Kisei HaKavod. HaKadosh Baruch Hu moves from the Kisei HaDin to the Kisei HaRachamim. And the Lubavitcher Hasidim, especially the Baal Tokei in that case, who was in charge of blowing the shofar, was very well versed in all these ideas. And there he is on the day of Rosh Hashanah, Pachad Pchadim, he's overwhelmed by the concept of, and the mitzvah he's about to fulfill, and its meaning and its significance up in the world. Rav Moshe, the Rav, was the Makri, and he yelled out Tkiya, and the Lubavitcher Chassid, who was meant to blow the shofar, broke down and started crying. So Moshe got very frustrated with him. He said to him, when you take a lulav, do you cry? When you eat matzah, do you cry? Well, just blow the shofar. This reminds me of the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Rachman over Atiku. You know, it's wonderful that you understand the deeper meanings of Torah based on the Chamishim Sharibino of Drash and Remez and Sod and so forth, but at the end of the day, it's pshat. When you come to do the mitzvah, you do it out of a sense of Emunah Pshuta, like a nar, like a child, without all the sophistication and all the, you know, the somersaults in the sky and the inner deeper meanings al pikamol of what the shofar is all about. Rachman Omer Tiku, blow the shofar. And that's the message here of the Gemara in Rosh, in Erevin that we began with, that the Gemara tells us about this Talmud Vosik who would be Metaris Asheretz. In other words, if you use those 150 different sharim of drash, remez, and sod, you can undermine the pshat itself. So be very careful. This is a warning to all of us, and especially those talmidei chachamim who know how to enter into drash and remez and sod and come up with new insights in shari bina. But at the end of the day, our absolute commitment is to pshat, and in pshat is only one way, only one method. Now, if this be the case, perhaps we can learn another agadic statement that's very related to our discussion here about Tumas or Tara Shrotzim in the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Yud Zayin. The Gemara is analyzing the qualifications for candidacy to sit on the highest court of Israel, the Sanhedrin Agdola. Call echad miyoshvei Sanhedrin hayitzarich ladas eich l'tayres asheretz. Om Rabbi Yehuda v'Rav ein moshivim b'Sanhedrin ala mishi yodeh l'tayres asheretz min haTorah. You cannot qualify as a judge in the highest court of Israel unless you're capable of being m'tayres asheretz. And Ravina steps forward and he says, Ani adun v'tareno, I know of a logical the Talmudic kind of reasoning by which I could draw the conclusion and prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that a sheret should be tar. And he goes ahead and he presents the Kal V'chomer from Nachash that we saw before in the Gemara in Erevin, and here he, Ravina, identifies himself as someone who's capable of being Metaris HaSheretz, and therefore he's capable and qualified to sit on the Sanhedrin HaGedol. And Rabbeinu Tam there in Masechta Sanhedrin says, I don't understand what the Gemara is talking about. Who wants to be Metaira Sheretz? Who wants to offer a what he calls a pilpul shel hevel? Hevel means vanity, something that's zero. It's absolutely worthless. So you're giving me pilpulim, and you have your dialectics and your Talmudic discourse, the decisions to come to a conclusion and prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that a sheretz is tar. Who cares about that? That's mamish pilpula shel hevel, charifus he calls it, shel hevel. Okay, you're brilliant and you have analytic skills and that's all wonderful, but you can't contradict what the Torah says. So Rabbeinu Tam leaves this as a question. As we mentioned earlier, one of the Arizal's contemporaries in a different part of the world, in Czechoslovakia, was the Maral who came from Prague. And the Maral wants to take a stab at this Gemara in Sanhedrin and try to explain why it's necessary to be able to be Metaris Asheretz. Why is that not called, as Rabbeinu Tam would have called it, Charifus Shel Hevel? Meaningless. No, says the Maral, it's very meaningful. And this, my friends, will lead us to the second part of our discussion for today. The first part, we said, was the 150 Sharei Bina that we can use to understand basically Remez, Drash, and Sod. But at the end of the day, we're absolutely committed to Pshat. But now we want to go on to a second principle here that's very related to the first. based on the Maral Miprag and shedding a light on the Agadita in Sanhedrin, the qualifications of a Dayan to sit on the High Court of Israel because he's capable of being Matiras Asheretz. Now, before we read, or at least parts of the Maral inside, I want to give just a general overview of, in my humble understanding of the Maral, what he's trying to say. And again, the ultimate goal here is that being Matiras Asheretz is not Harifu Shel Hevel, it's not meaningless. It's part of Torah. And he says that if we want to analyze and understand the essence of Asheretz, then we have to realize that nothing is black or white, but that everything that God created has an element of both black and white, has gray. It's gray. It's a synthesis. There's not just a pure tumma. It's not just pure evil, but it has an element of tara, of purity and kedusha and sanctity. That God created something, it has sanctity to it. He explains this with a mashal. He says we have dalad yesodos, and it's everything in the world that exists in the physical material world is made up of one of the four basic elements. We'll focus on two of them for the purpose of this mashal. There's ruach, which is the air, and then there's afar or adama, which is the carbon, the ground itself. So he takes the following case. Let's say you cut off a branch from a tree. That branch is made up of two parts. It's got airspace in it, and it's got solid wood. And I'll prove to you that there's airspace in it. If you take afar, in its purest form, absolute afar, and you throw it into water, it sinks to the bottom. But if you take a tree, a branch, it will float on the surface. Why is that? Because it has ruach in it. And you can argue back and forth how to classify this piece of eitz, this piece of wood. Shall we classify it as ruach because of the airspace inside of it that makes it float? Or shall we classify it as afar? It's fundamentally coming from afar because if you would remove the airspace for a moment, it would sink to the bottom because it's pure afar. So again, what the Maral wants to show you is that you could have one entity, one reality, that has two dimensions to it. And because of that complexity, you have to decide and determine which is Ikar, which is Tofel, what is the primary element. We might come to the conclusion, and this was one opinion, that Eitz is primarily Afar, but it also has an element, a secondary or less significant element of Ruach, of air in it. Here too, when it comes to a Sheretz has different dimensions to it. It has what we call a Bechina Letara, and it has a Bechina Letuma. And although the Torah tells us that a Sheretz is Tameh in those cases, which means that the Tara dimension of the Sheretz is secondary, but nevertheless, what is that Tara element in a Sheretz? And that's what these Pilpulim are all about. This is not a Pilpul Shel Hevel. This is a true, genuine pilpul to try to understand and identify, define the bechina of Tara in a Sheretz. And if you want to understand the truth about a Sheretz and define its reality, you have to have both the pshat, and the pshat certainly tells you that it's Tomei, but you also have to have the remez, drush, and sod in order to understand through Yochach, Shari 150, Shari Bina, that there's an element of Tara in the Sheretz. And again, if we had time, we would apply this to a human being and see the moral and ethical implications. Again, I'm leaving out Amalek. Amalek is a separate category, a separate entity. It's a total identification with Samael, with the powers of evil. But leaving Amalek on the side, when you talk about your average rank-and-file evildoer, he has, let's say, Rov Tomei, but he's also got Miut Tara. And that's what we're getting here from the 150 arguments to be Matiras Asheretz. And to expand upon this Maral, we're going to take a look at the famous insight of the Arizal regarding what we call Macholas Asuros, forbidden foods, and a chunk, if not the majority of Parshas Shmini is dedicated to this concept of Macholas Asuros. And the Ari says, once again, there's nothing that's pure black and pure white. The idea and the responsibility for which man was created and put on this world is to somehow elevate the nitzotzos of Kedusha. There are sparks of sanctity inherent in every physical object. And it's our job through Asiyas HaMitzvahs to elevate these nitzotzei Kedusha. For example, you give me a food, give me an apple, and I make a bracha on it, and I eat it l'shem shamayim. I want to be healthy and be able to serve Hashem and study His Torah. That's male. That elevates the hidden and concealed sparks of Kedusha within that apple or within that object that I'm eating. And to demonstrate this, the Arizal used to quote an Agadat Masechta Pesachim Daf Mem Tesam at Beis in the name of Rebbe. Amaretz Asur Lechol Basa. An ignoramus who's not versed in Torah, whose lifestyle is not a Torah lifestyle, he should be a vegetarian. He doesn't eat the flesh of an animal. Shenemar, again quoting a pasuk in our parsha here in Kashrus, Zos Torah Sabehema Ve'a'of. The Torah introduces the concept of which behemos and ophos were allowed to eat by saying Zos Torahs. And Rebbe Dashin's Kol Osek BaTorah, this parsha of which animals and which flesh you're allowed to eat, that's addressed, it's only relevant to an Osek BaTorah. He's Muto Lechol Bosa Behemov Yof. He could shech the animal, the chicken, and eat its flesh. But Kol Misha'ino Osek BaTorah, if he has a different kind of lifestyle, a whole different set of priorities, Asur Lechol Basar Behemov Yof, he's enjoined from eating the flesh of an animal. As we said before, we might recommend that he be a vegetarian. Why? A Talmid Chacham who's Osek BaTorah, he's allowed to eat Basar because he knows how to free up those and elevate those inherent potential sparks of Kedusha in the Basar. He can make that Achila into an elevated achilov called Reach Nichoch Lashem, but an Amaretz who is not Osik B'Torah, he dedicates his life to what we call Havle Olam Azeh, the vanities of this world. Also Lo Lechol Basar, he's not allowed to eat meat because he doesn't have the possibility of being Malo the Kedusha of the Nitzotzos that are inherent in the animal flesh. So there's an entire process by which the Talmid Chacham takes an animal and ultimately is mala the nitzotzos of Kedusha by eating it in the right way, going through step by step, and having the right kavanas. Based on this fundamental breakthrough of the Arizal, the Kedusha Salevi, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, Mibar Ditchev, one of the shining lights amongst the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov, he's able to shed a light, a new light on the Gemara, a very famous Haggadot and Chulin, Amrale, this is on Daf Kuf Testament Days, Yalsol, Rabbi Nachman, whatever is asur on one side of the scale, there's something parallel on the other side of the scale that we're allowed to eat. For example, you taste dam. Dam is an isur kares. You're not allowed to eat dam. But yet, in the case of a kaved, you know, you take a liver. Of course, there's a whole process of malicha to remove the dam. But the liver is so full of dam that even after the process of malicha is completed, there's still the meat is still saturated with dam, and that you're allowed to eat. Well, you're not allowed to eat, for example, the chelev, the fats of a behemah, but the Torah allows you to eat the fats of a chaya. Even in the case of a chazir, the Gemara gives us an example of something called shibuta. It's a kind of a fish, and the brain of the fish, the moch of the fish, has a certain taste That's similar to that of a chazir. And the Kedusha Levi, based on the Arizal, wants to understand what's the purpose. Why did God have to create something that's heter, which has the tam, so that everything that's also and that has the tam iser has its parallel in the tam heter? Well, why is that important? Again, I have a friend who told me he's a Baal Tshuva, that there's nothing on the face of the world like lobster, like seafood. So I can't vouch one way or the other. I mean, I look at a lobster and it's hard for me to imagine eating it, but he says it has an amazing taste. Again, we're commanded to say, I don't care about the taste. The Torah says it's awesome. Meaning that even if I were to be tempted to eat it, so for example, you go to Spain and everything is chazer, everything is it's bacon and eggs. It hangs from every store over there. So give me something that tastes like bacon, this moach de shibuta, and now I'm tempted to want to eat bacon because I've eaten something that tastes like chazir. So what do? I'm enjoined from eating the chazir. So I say, even though I've tasted it, I'm not going to eat it because the Torah says I'm not allowed to eat it. And the Kedush HaLevi says that everything that was created by God has both elements of tov and ra in it. We say in the Pasuk in Yeshaya, Yotzer Or Uvore Choshech, Oseh Shalom Uvore Ra, Ani Hashem Oseh Kol Eila. So Hashem puts both evil and good in it. And the question is, what's primary and what's secondary? And the Kedush HaLevi illustrates and he embellishes this idea that we're called upon, and this is our goal here in life, is to be mala the nitzotz of Kedusha, to take that potential for Kedusha, those sparks that are inherent in the object, and by eating them in a proper way, like the Talmud Chacham does, to be mala those Kedusha. But that's okay in the case of macholos mutaros, but in the case of macholos asuros, how can a person be mala? He's not allowed to eat this food, so how can he be mala the Tzotz of Kedusha? Says the Kedusha Levi that all he has to do is decide that he's not going to eat something. You give him something that he's not allowed to eat, and he decides, I'm not going to eat it. And that itself, somehow, in a more abstract, conceptual world, is mala the Tzotz of Kedusha in the Macholos Asuras. Because even Macholos Asuras have an element of Kedusha to them. Again, call it a secondary element. And we want to free and upgrade those elements, those dimensions of Kedusha. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the following, you know what? Eat something that has the same taste as a Dover Asur. You'll begin to appreciate that taste. And then when they feed you, when they offer you a Dover Asur, you'll abstain from eating it. And by abstaining it, you'll be mild in the tilts of Kedusha that are potential even in something that's Asur. And basically, what we have here, as we saw in the case of Shratzim, within the frame of reference of the Ari, that there's an analysis of being Matiris HaSheretz in 150 ways, that there are elements of Tara in the Sheretz, and in Macholos HaSuras there are elements of Kedusha, the Tzotzos, that have to be free. So when a Jew decides that he's not going to eat that which is Tomei, he's going to abstain from eating that which is Tomei, then, again, you can ask why he did so. Did he do so because he finds it disgusting and repulsive, or did he do so because he knows the taste, and despite the appreciation of the taste, he decides, I'm not going to do it because Hashem told me not to eat it. Now, how would he appreciate the taste of Macholos Asuras? That's the Gemara of Yosef and Rav Nachman in Masech Tehulin, that everything that you're enjoined from eating by the Torah, you can eat something parallel that has that taste. You know, today they have all sorts of fake things, that replace, we had over Pesach, we had a mustard that's not kidney, it's a fake mustard. Today you can have fake meat, you can get a taste of anything, but now you go ahead and there's something that's awesome. You say, well, I know, I appreciate and acknowledge its great taste, but I'm not going to eat it. That itself, when he's Moneas Atzma Milechel, that itself is Malo the Tzotz of Kedusha. And if this be the case, we go back to the Maral Miprag. And the Maral Miprag says that it's not a pilpul shel charifa shel hevel to reveal that essence of the Sheretz that has, in at least in one dimension, a bechina of Tara, because we know now that there's inherent or concealed within the Sheretz and needs out some sort of sparks of Kedusha that come from the roots of Tara. And this is very important for us to know, because we have to understand that when we avoid these Macholos HaTmeim, in doing so we're male the nitzotzos of Kedusha. So now, as I say, we go on to Roman numeral number 2. I mean, the first yesod was the 150 shari bina, and the fact that we're absolutely committed to pshat, which is Torah achas. But now, what we're saying is that there's another dimension here to be metayr es asheretz, and that is that we have to realize that there is a reality. There's the existence of the reality of kedusha, even in a sheretz tummy, and we have to verify, we have to, you know, validate and formulate that tara element by being metayres hasheretz in 50 ways and 150 ways. And now, if we take a look at the Kli Yakar, he also embellishes this Gemara that we started with in Erevin about the Talmud Vasek, who's Metayer es Hasheretz in 150 ways. And here we get to know Roman numeral number 3, which is more of a Musar, of an ethical shmooze, not so much a Kabbalistic philosophical shmooze about, you know, Pshat versus Rebbe's Drush and Sod, or the 150 Shari Bina that could be misused. We're no longer talking about how to do a mitzvah, or are we talking about the nitzotzes of kedusha that are inherent even in something that's tamei, and try to relate to that and verify and validate those elves. Now we're on a whole different level, and that is human intellect. On the one hand, and this is the paradox of human intellect, God endowed us with the greatest gift that we could possibly have, and that is the koach hadas, the chachma of an adam. But on the other hand, you know, everything has its thesis and antithesis. It's very easy, chas v'shon, to be masalef divrei elokim chayim, to simply trample on the words of God. I think it would be better off if we just quote the words of the Kli Yakar verbatim. He says, "Li nireh shetalmid vasek zeh hayamochiach es hamon bazeh." He was castigating with a musa shmuz the people, the audience. Hamarim potim shel heta kol maseim. What they tend to do is, this is human nature, based on the Yetzer Hara and its power, to justify that which is evil, and they convert it into something good. They convince themselves that it's great. You know, a person doesn't wake up in the morning on time, and it's a cold winter. You know, you can come up with 1,000 different excuses. You know, Chazal say about Cosby, about Zimri, who was the Nasi of Shimon, Shevet Shimon. He had a relationship with Cosby. It was a terrible thing. And he convinced himself with a whole calculation that this is a mitzvah, until Pinchas set the record straight. Well, this is what happens here. The Yetzer Hara, when it has, it gives you a taiva, a certain desire to achieve a certain pleasure in life, then you'll be mora heta liatzma. This concept of horas heta is something that repeats itself over and over again throughout Chazal. And Chazal say that if you do it, you violate the Caesar with Aura Seta once, twice, three times, eventually becomes second nature to you. You don't even bother coming up with any justification. So this Talmud Vasek wanted to tell the people they're not going in the right way. Everybody agrees that the Sheretz is Tomei, and the Torah calls it Tomei. But yet we could be retired in 150 ways. And we could actually confuse ourselves until we convince ourselves that the Sheretz is Tar. This is the koach of Seichel Adam, the intellect of man. He could be metayer that which is tamid. He could be mora hetel yatzma. And therefore, the message here is very clear, that a person who's endowed with intelligence has to be very careful not to rely. You know, a person is so full of himself. You know, I'm a scholar. I graduated, you know, the Ivy Leagues, and I'm so brilliant that I can determine for myself what's right and what's wrong, how to live my life. And that's called a Ras Heter.
Lo yisvach al shikol daito. The message here of the Talmud Vasik is don't rely on your shikol adas, your rov chachma, because if you can't, if you do so, you'll be matayras hasheretz with 150 arguments. That's how brilliant you are. And Reb Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin in his writings also touches on this fundamental idea, and he says that the Gemara in Erevin of that Talmud Vasik who's Metaris HaSheretz, and everybody asks what's the Toelis of, as Rebbe Tam calls it, the Harifa Shel Hevel, the Torah says in the Sheretz is Tomei El HaMechuvan El HaHaros Ki Lo Al Re'iyas V'Rayas Sichlo Yismoch HaAdam. He shouldn't rely on all the proofs and the logical derivations and deductions. He can come to the conclusion in 150 ways and prove that the sheretz is indeed tar. And that's what happens if ultimately we rely on our seichel and only on our seichel. But roi ladas ha'emes b'meshu emes. We have to acknowledge that our human intellect doesn't go that far. Today you have all sorts of people. You know, it goes back really to Korach with the with the bayis shekula isfarim, it doesn't need a mezuzah. Tal shekula tcheles. Yeah, we use common sense logic and sometimes even more sophisticated analytic approaches, and we come to the conclusion that Torah is this, Torah is that. We magal ponim shalom kalloch, and we turn the Torah inside and upside down. We could have come with all sorts of eterim. So this is really Roman numeral number 3. You know, it's not just the concept of 150 Share Bina that we spoke about, not just the concept of recognizing the 150 different dimensions of Tara in a Sheretz Tameh, but recognizing the danger of utilizing our Seichel in these 150 ways, because we may come to conclusions we're antithetical to the Torah. And Revi in Masechta Avos in the Mishnah in the fourth parak says Al Tistakel B'Kankan El B'ma Sheyeshbo. So Kankan, if you take a look, you can split it into a Resh and a Sefer. The first half is Kuf Nun, and the second half is Kuf Nun. So the first Kuf Nun are the Tamim, 150 explanations to understand why the Sheretz is Tar. And then Keneged that, there are 150 Kuf Nun rays of understanding why the Sheretz is really Tame. So we're left with Kan. The Kan is so serious a Kan. So what do we do at the end of the day? The answer is El B'mashi Yeshbo, meaning what the Torah tells us. If we have Siat Nishmaya and Amuda, we totally dedicate to what the Torah wants us to conclude, then we'll hopefully be Mechavin El Ames. El B'mashi Yeshbo, meaning we want to know what we have to learn and what conclusions we have to derive, and we're not going to rely on our Kan or our Kan or Kan. And that's what we have to be mispalt HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that ignore all the logical, brilliant explanations and didactics that conclude that Sheretz is Tar, but Hashem should open our eyes and give us the insight to appreciate what's Amitu Shel Torah. And we definitely need Siyata Dishmaya here. You know, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that when the Sanhedrin was organized, they would sit in a half circle, a chatzi goren, a semicircle. Why? So they should all see each other. In other words, if they were seated one behind the other, for example, or one line and then another line, this way or that way, then they wouldn't see each other. So in a circular position, they could see each other. Now, why a half a circle? So the Gemara explains, because the judges have to also see the witnesses. Now, if you have a complete circle, then maybe everyone sitting in the circle can see anyone else who's sitting in the circle. That's fine. But when you put the witnesses in the middle of the circle, then half of the circle is going to see their back rather than see their face. But the Mefarshim are bothered by this. And they want to know, well, it doesn't mean that the judges therefore have to sit in a semicircle. Even if they would sit three quarters, they could still all see the Edim. If you situate a prayer, they could all see each other. So why is it half a semicircle? And the explanation that's offered by the Oy of Yisrael is that whenever you see half, or as the British calls it, half, I can't pronounce it the way they do, then what it means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the other half. Like in Machzah Shekel, we had a long discussion about this way back. And Kaviyochel, when it comes to judgment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there with the judges. That's called Elokim Nitzav Badas Kel. God is there participating, Kaviyochel, in the judgment of the Dayanim. And that's the 50-50, the palga gufa, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu considers himself kaviyochel, half of the guf. And we need HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because otherwise if we just use our, and the greatest challenge is the dayanim, because they're certainly using their intellect, their wisdom, their bina, then if man is left to his own rationale, then he may come to be Metaris Asheretz in 150 different ways. So we need HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the other half of this goal. But the question I wanted to ask you is, when Ravina offers the example of how to be Metaris Asheretz, he starts with the Nachash. Is that purely coincidental? Why, of all the Shrutzim, there are many different Shrutzim in that Tahorim, he starts with the Nachash and he says, well, Nachash is Memis Umar Betuma, and yet he's Tar. What about Shrutzim? So you could say it's not coincidental in the sense that the Nachash fits that description. On the one hand, it should be Tomei because it generates Tumah by killing its victim, but on the other hand, it's Tar. And that sets up the Kal V'chomer. But perhaps we can take it on a deeper level. It's not coincidental that of all the Shrutzim, the one that fits this bill to base our Kuf Nun Taimil L'Tayrus HaSheretz is the Nachash. Because Chazal tell us about the Nachash. Now, in order to appreciate the Nachash in its pure form, in its original created form, we have to take a look at an Agadah in Masechta Shabbos Kufei Amid Beis. The Gemara is analyzing the approach or the methodology of the Yetzer Hara, the powers of evil that tempt us. The Gemara says, Hayom Omer Lo Asei Kach. L'machar omelo, asei kach, acha omelo, avod avod zara, v'holech li'ovid. It's a gradual process. The Nachash knows how to seduce the person step by step until he brings him to the brink of a very serious and catastrophic violation. So let's talk about the Nachash. The Nachash, The word in Lashon Kodesh starts with a nun. The Megala Amukos has a lot to say of Shimshon Shapiro about the nun of Nachash. He says that nun represents symbolically the nun Shari Tumah, the 50 gates of Tumah. And the original Nachash was so clever and so cunning that he was able to trip man, Adam and Chava, in his net, catch him in his net, Zuma, etc., etc., that's going to impact on man throughout the generations. And that's because of the Nun Shari Tum of Nachash. And it's only at the time of Matan Torah, when Klal Yisrael stood on the Har Sinai, that's Pascha Zuhamasam. That's when the impact of the Nachash, which penetrated into the moral and spiritual fiber of man, was Nifsak. Nifsak means when it terminated. So we take a look at the parsha of the Sneh at the beginning of Shmos. Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Hashem, Botziacha Esa'ami Mitzrayim, what's the purpose of taking the people out of Egypt? Tavdu Nesalukim Alahar Azeh. And that's a reference to Har Sinai, to Har Chorev, to Kabbalah Satorah. Now, if you take the word Tavdun, you can leave the nun out for a minute and say tavdu nun. In other words, the nun is a reference symbolically to the 50 days that bridge between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kabbalas HaTorah. These are Yemei HaSfira, the 50 days that culminate in Chag HaShavuos in Matan Torah. And at that point, after the 50 days of tavdun, Klal Yisrael were able to reach the state of his dakhus, meaning of cathartic purification from the tumah of the Nachash. The Nachash is 50, but connected to 50, we have the Kabbalah Sator of Klal Yisrael of Tavdun, the Nun of Tavdun. And who is the Nachash? The Nachash is the Yetzahara. The Gemara says above Basud after Zion, who? Satan, who Yetzahara, Malchamoves. If you take a look at the word Satan, once again you have the Nun at the end of the word, which is referring to the Sharei Tumah, and we have the Shin and the Tes, which represent Sharei Tumah. So we have Sharei Tumah Chamishin, and that's the Satan. Sharei Tumah Chamishin. The Nachash represents the Sharei Tumah. Kadosh Baruch Hu created the Nachash as the most brilliant of all animals. He stood on 2 feet. And he was meant to be the king of the animals. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, after the chait of Adam HaRishon, Arur, he put a curse on the Nachash, that he would be the lowest of all creatures, and Katas L'Raglav, he would crawl on his belly, and so forth and so on. But the Nachash was able to tempt, the Nachash was hand-picked, chosen by Samuel, by the Yetzirah, to attack Adam and Chava and trip them up and catch them in their net. And how did he do so, the Nachash? Because the Nachash, the Nun, as we said, is 50, and those are the 50 Sharei Tumah, and the Nachash was able to be Metayer the Sheretz in 50 different ways, utilizing or abusing his intellect of the Nun Sharei Tumah. And that's how he was able to undermine man, tempt him, because the Nachash Ayaoru Mikol Chayis Asadis Asa Hashem Elokim, he is the cleverest of all animals. He's able to use his Chachmah's cunning to tempt man and convince man that what he's about to do by eating from the Eitz Hadas is certainly permissible and even recommended. It's a mitzvah. And the Nachash is able to achieve that goal through the Nun Sharei Tumah, Kenege the Nun Sharei Chochmah. So again, what we have to emphasize here in the Musar part of our discussion today is that being Matayah the Sheretz is a way in which the Tzahar convinces us that that which is Tameh is really Tar, that which is us is really a mitzvah. And our greatest challenge is to, on the one hand, be aware of the fact that there are 150 ways of being Matayah the Sheretz, but at the end of the day, the Sheretz is Tameh. Now it's interesting that David HaMelech authors Tehillim, and the Arizal is curious about the relationship between David HaMelech as the author of 150 chapters of Tehillim and Adam HaRishon, because the Arizal says that David HaMelech is a quasi Gilgal, so to speak, of Adam HaRishon. And Adam HaRishon forfeits 70 years of his life so that David HaMelech could live for 70 years. And insofar as David is a reincarnation of Adam HaRishon, he has to be metaken. The whole purpose of reincarnation is to be metaken, to rectify that which you messed up. So he has to mess up in 70 years that which Adam HaRishon... I'm sorry, he has to rectify, I meant to say, in the 70 years of his life, that which Adam HaRishon messed up on, because of the influence of the Nachash. And the influence of the Nachash is these 50 Sharei Tumah, which, as we said at the outset, can be multiplied by 3 to give you 150. And David HaMelech opens Tehillim by saying, Ashrei ha'ish asher lo holach batzas rishoyim, ubederech hatoyim lo amad, v'moshem lo yisotzak, ki v'toras Hashem chefetzu torosu yege yom v'layla. And when he says Ashrei Ha'ish, the Medrash says at the beginning of Tehillim, Medrash Shochar Tov, Medaber Bi Adam HaRishon. The Ish that he's referring to, or alluding to, is Adam HaRishon. Omar Adam HaRishon, Ashreini Im Lo Amadati Bidrachav Shal Nachash, Vi Ashrei Im Lo Yashavti B'moshavo Shel Leitzonus. So the entire discussion here, presented by David HaMelech at the beginning, the kickoff of Tehillim, and basically the 150 Kapitloch in Tehillim, is Keneged Adam HaRishon. That Adam HaRishon was not able to be omed against the method of the Nachash, and he fell into the net. He was captured in the net of the Nochash to be Matiris Hasheretz. And Ashrei is a person Asholo Holach Biatzas Rishon, says David HaMelech. But Moshev Leitzim Lo Yoshev, he doesn't sit next to the Nochash, who's the Letz. So according to the Arizal, that David HaMelech is a Gilgal Neshama of Adam HaRishon, who Adam HaRishon fell prey and got caught in the net of the Nochash to be Metar Sashetz Bekuf Nun Taimim. And that's how the Nochash was able to penetrate and inject, I should say, in a Zuhama into all the creatures that came from Adam HaRishon, that they would all be, in a sense, vulnerable to be seduced, to be nichshal through being metaris es hashes bekuf nun taimim. And therefore, in order to rectify this, David HaMelech writes 150 mizmorei tehillim so that every single Jew could be mispal Hashem with 150 mizmorei tehillim to save and spare and protect him from the atzas yetzaharus metaris hasheretz be Kuf Nun in 150 different time. And finally, to swing back to pay our debt from the beginning of the Shia, why Rabbi Yishmael in the Gemara that we started with in Bav Metzia Samach Aleph Amid Beis establishes, because of the equation in the pasuk between Yitzias Mitzrayim and Shrotzim, that Ilmole, if not for the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim just for the sake of Dover Zeh, that we shouldn't be Mitami B'Shrotzim, die. Why is it so significant that we shouldn't be Mitami B'Shrotzim? There is, as we said before, the 364 other Losa says in the Torah. But again, if we go back to the beginning of Sefer Shvos, Vayehi Vayomim Arabim Ahim Vayomis Melch Mitzrayim Vayonchu Bnei Yisrael Min Avoda Vayizaku Vatal Shavosim Elokim Min Avoda, the Medrash says Vayomis Melch Mitzrayim Shenitztara Vametzor Choshev Kemes, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu struck Paro with leprosy, and the Chartubei Paro came forward and said Ein Lecha Refuah Imloshen Ishchot Mikatne for the Ketanim of Yisrael Kuf Nun Ba'erev Kuf Nun Ba'boker V'rochatz B'dmeyam Shtei Piyomim B'yom. So both at night and during the day, a second time, Paro would immerse himself, would bathe, so to speak, in the blood of Katne Yisrael, and they murdered. Brutally murdered 150 children at night and another 150 by day, and used that blood for Paro. And you wonder whether Mitzrayim were considered Chachamim. You know, the Psukim in Tanakh consider Chochmas Mitzrayim being something great. How could the Chatumim Mitzrayim believe that Paro would be healed by slaughtering 150 children night by night and by day? But again, getting back to the Arizal. And the Arizal says, why did Klal Yisrael suffer so terribly, such tremendous, profound suffering in Shibud Mitzrayim for such a long period of time? And the answer is, says the Ari, based on his Kabbalah, that after the Chet of Adam HaRishon, when he ate from the Eitz Hadas, Tov V'ra, there was a blemish in all the Neshamos that were included under Adam HaRishon when he sinned. And therefore they needed a Tikkun Gadol to rectify through many Gilgulim in order to be Mitzayif all these Tikkunim together until they could terminate that spiritual disease which was generated, which resulted from the Chet of Adam HaRishon when he ate from the Eitz Hadas. And the Arizal goes on to say that the first period of human history which represents the Gilgul is the Dor HaMabul. And they were mashkes as darkom, so the evil that was injected into their genetic, spiritual genetic code from the Chet HaRishon still was very, very powerful, to such an extent that the Dor HaMabul had to be wiped out. And then the next level of Gilgul was the Dor HaFloga, and they also went the evil way. They weren't able to rectify the pagam that was in their genetic code based on the Chet Adam HaRishon. And then the third Gilgul was Anshei Sdom, who again were Mekalka, they weren't Mitake. Finally, in the fourth Gilgul, we get to Mitzrayim. And here the Nishamos of Klal Yisrael are in Mitzrayim. And as a result, says the Ari of the Kovid Hashiva, the very difficult, harsh work, the enslavement, the anguish of the Jewish people, Nizdakaku v'nismarku, there was a process by which they would be purified of the influence of the Chet HaRishon, the Eitz Hadas. And now the Mitzrayim are going to be punished measure for measure, because they continue to do evil, terrible evil. So we have against the Dor HaMabul that were Mashkes as Darkam, and therefore they were destroyed and wiped off the face of the earth at the time of the Mabul. And Paro makes a gzera called Abena Yiloda Ya'ora Tashlichu, and therefore the Mitzrayim will die in Yamsuf, like the Mabul. And that's Kenegi the Aver of Kolabena Yiloda Yiloda Tashrichu. Now we have the sin of the Dara Floga, Hava Nilbina Levenim Livnos Esair Yes Hamigdal. And we're going to find a meet the Kenegi meet against the Mitzrim Vayamaru Es Chayim Bavoda Kosher Bechomer Ubil Levenim. And then we get to the Dar. I'm saying within the Dar Flug we have the case of Vayiven, that they build a Migdal, and here also by Mitzrayim it says Vayiven Ari Miskinos Leparos Piso Misram says, and they will be punished Mida Kenegin Mida. In other words, what we understand now is the Khartume Paro, they gave Paro this recommendation to shecht 150 children, Baboka 150 children, Ba'erev. They wanted to be Ma'orer, a Kitrug, on the Neshamos of Klal Yisrael, because they wanted to show that the Neshamos of Klal Yisrael were also influenced by the Chet HaKadmon of the eating of the Eitz HaDas, and that the ancestors of Klal Yisrael were also taken and captured in the net of the Nachash, who were Mataris Asheretz Bekuf Nun Taimim. So the Nova Kuf Nun over here, because Paro himself is a reincarnation of the Nachash HaKadmoni, is the Mashal Klal Yisrael with Kuf Nun, take away Kuf Nun children, Baboker Kuf Nun Ba'erev. And therefore, when Rabbi Shmuel says El Mole Helisi Es Yisrael Mitzrayim, Ela Bishvil Dover Zeh She'ein Mitamim Bishratzim Dai, because the neshamas of Klal Yisrael that were in Mitzrayim had sinned in the Eitz Hadas, meaning they were descendants of the original Eitz Hadas, and that was influenced by the Nochash HaKadmoni, who was Mitar the Sheretz in 150 ways, is therefore, if they're not going to be Mitami Shrotzim, despite the fact that the Nochash is Tor, and logically, therefore, we should have concluded that all the Shrotzim are Torim, that's a tikkun, that's a rectification for the Neshamos. Because what we're doing is rejecting the Nochash HaKadmoni's way of being Mitar Es HaSheretz V'Kufnun Taimim. So, Mirtz Hashem, we should all be Zoche to dedicate ourselves to the Kufnun Shari Bina, not to be influenced by the Kufnun Shari Tuma. We should understand that ultimately our commitment in an absolute way is to the Tumas Hashrotzim, not to be Mitaris Hasheretz. And we should continuously appreciate that Esek HaTorah. When we dedicate ourselves to Torah study, we should utilize it and activate the 150 Shari Bina of Drash, Remez, and Sod. But at the end of the day, through our Amuna Pshut of Anar, we are dedicated completely and exclusively to Pshat, to the Torah Achas Mishpat Echad Yelachem, to be Mekayim the Ratzon Hashem. We can embellish it with all sorts of asogas and kavanas through Ashari Bina, but never to rely on anything but Pshat. And if we see people around us who are coming up with new interpretations, now there's an attack on Bris Milah, for example, going on, that's been going on for a while now. It dates back to the time of Aner V'Eshkol Mamre, at the time of Rav Avinu's Bris Milah, but they're always attacking something. You know, it has to do with men and women, and now homosexuality, and all this kind of stuff. They always come up with Kuf Nun Taimim to be Matiris Asheretz. But we have to be dedicated and committed to the fact that there's something that's above our seichel, above human intellect, and that is the absolute commitment to Torah Achas, to the Pshat, to do the mitzvahs and implement them as they were given to us. And if we do so, Im Yirtz Hashem will bring Nachas Ruach, Lefanav Yisparach, and will be zoch to great things, to the tikkunim of the 100.